Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you for coming once again to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can also find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. It's a great Twitter network, and I highly recommend it. So please check it out. And when you do, say hello to Mark Preissig for me, and that would be great. And also for those who are new to the show and you like the content of the show, please consider following it by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk homepage here on Blog Talk Radio. And underneath the icon is a follow button. Just click on to that and you will find a follow button and just click on it and it will give you email updates on when the show will be airing and the content. Also, please visit the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Now, also, these shows are archived, so they can be downloaded later, either to your iPod or your iPhone or smartphone, or also can even be downloaded to CDs for folks can listen to it in their cars. It's a great idea for folks to listen to it who are very busy. And also, of course, one of the best ways is to listen to it live and also through the link here on Blog Talk Radio. And so thank you very much for sharing, because this is information that gets out to the folks. Now, tonight we welcome Matt Margolis and Mark Noonan and talk about their book, 150 Ways. Or reasons, rather, Barack Obama is the worst president in history. And a little bit about these folks. In 2003, in November, Mark founded Blogs for Bush, one of the most popular political blogs during the 2004 presidential campaign, earning him an invitation to the Republican National Convention. Since then, Matt has launched a number of successful blogs and has been invited guest on local and national television and radio programs, of course, such as Bard's Logic Political Talk. Mark Noonan is a longtime blogger and Navy veteran, and Noonan writes on a wide variety of subjects and has appeared in old and new media over the years. Matt and Mark both blog at blogsforvictory.com, and the first book, Caucus of Corruption, The Truth About the New Democratic Majority, was published in 2007. This is from the press release for the 150 Reasons Why Barack Obama is the Worst President in History. It says, it exposes the truth about his presidency and documents the facts that would shape his legacy. His real record on the economy, the ugly truths about Obamacare, the shocking abuses of taxpayer dollars, his bitterly divisive style of governing, his shameless usurping of the Constitution, his scandals and cover-ups, his policy failures at home and abroad, and the unprecedented expansion of government power. Of course, folks, remember that Bard's Logic Political Talk is the grassroots We the People show. And at this time, I will bring on our guests, and I will open up the mics to both Matt and Mark. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. Good. So if there's any little bit of background that I missed on either one of you gentlemen that you'd want to chime in and inform the audience about, I believe we'd all appreciate that. We'll start off with you, Matt, and then go ahead, Mark. So, Matt, you have the floor.
I think you pretty much covered it. you know, Mark and I have been bloggers for a long time, and, you know, it's one of the things we've enjoyed doing is talking politics, and kind of, you know, over the years it's kind of changed a bit from supporting President Bush and what he's doing to covering the election that where Obama was first elected, and shaking our heads wondering why people voted for him a second time. And that's where this book came out of, trying to put all the pieces together so that people would understand why that was such a bad idea.
And Mark?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, Matt and I were both a little flabbergasted there after the election, and Matt gives me a call on, I think it was November 8th, and said, we really should write a book about this, because I don't think people really knew the full story of Obama, or they couldn't possibly have voted for him. And then we started doing the research for the book, and the book kept growing. It was kind of like a, you know, a monster that just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We were first thinking, well, maybe 50, maybe 75 reasons. You know, before too long, we had 100, 150. We actually blew past that and said, you know, we got to stop, whittle this down to 150 and try and put it out before the end of the second term. And that's where the book is at now. It's 150 reasons, of course, as we've all watched this last week. We could clearly have gone for 200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that kind of brings me to my first and then second question, excuse me, is, why would what you also thought it would have been better to publish this book, or, you know, written and published it before the election?
Well, you know, I think that the main reason why this didn't happen before the election is, to be honest, I wasn't sure there was another nonfiction book in me. You know, our last book came out in 2007, and so, you know, we're talking 6 years here since our previous book, and so. You know, the genesis of the book came from the desire to answer the answer the question as to why people didn't, or why people voted for him, and you know, I just felt that the reason why people voted for him was that they didn't know all the full story, and the thing is that there's so much stuff that wasn't talked about, and so it's not so much that. I mean, this book could have been published before the election if we had thought of the idea beforehand. But, you know, I mean, I think the bigger picture here is not trying to prevent Obama from – this isn't about trying to prevent Obama from getting reelected, because obviously that happened already. But this is about – this is looking
forward.
Yeah, the
Republicans ensured that.
This is about Obama's legacy. I think that at this point is the bigger thing here. You know, I don't know if a book, you know, a couple of months before the election would have done anything, but I think in the long term, a book that documents the details of Obama's presidency, things that, you know, he's not going to be talking about when he opens up his presidential library, and the stuff that the media has just ignored, you know, having that source for the people, the next generation to have, so that they can understand the truth of his presidency was far more important. This is about Obama's legacy, first and foremost.
And Mark?
Well, yeah, and it's exactly that, because the thing is that I feel especially strongly is that we can't dare have this again. I mean, we've already got ourselves into 8 years of Obama. We see what he's doing to this country. We have to make certain that people understand what he was really about. Otherwise, you know, if we let the media and Obama determine what Obama's legacy will be starting on January 2017, then, you know, we got President Hillary for 8 years, and then we got Lord only knows what comes after that, if there's any country left for them to ruin. I mean, I was just, you know, kind of reviewing a little bit of the book before I came on tonight, and, you know, one of the things that struck me as I was just reviewing it again is, remember, this guy started betraying his own words within 9 days of getting sworn in. It was a small thing. You might remember from 2008, he was going to post all bills online for 5 days prior to signing them. Not a difficult promise to keep.
Whatever,
I mean, come on. Boom. January 29th, 2009, 9 days after he's sworn in, he breaks his promise. He signs the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act 2 days after it's passed. I mean, for goodness sake, how could you not wait till February 1st to sign that bill? It's just, you know, like it set the pattern for the whole term. Everything is, I don't know, I mean, it's almost like anything he says, you almost have to take it at the exact opposite. If he says he's going to do A, it's going to be B, unless he's promising to, like, ruin the coal industry. And the thing is, he's gotten away with it. He got reelected. He got reelected with 51% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
He got reelected when we spent on our side $1 billion fighting against him. Obviously, people did not really understand what he was doing, and we better make certain people understand what he was doing, or we're going to get stuck with another one of him starting in 2017.
Right, and well, in the Republican Party, really, you know, nationally, they're, you know, the ones who go up against the Democrats, maybe more of the alternative third parties. They see some more success locally. But nationally, you know, I think you could blame the Republicans, at least in my opinion, almost as much as the Democrats or the people is voting back Barack Obama, because having Mitt Romney being the getting the nomination was, and he was the worst candidate of any of the candidates to go up against Barack Obama. I mean, as soon as you can listen to, you know, past archive shows, and as soon as he got the nomination, I mean, I already knew it was going to be 4 more years of Obama. I knew, you know, so he was the worst shot. And the Republicans pretty much pushed, and we won't talk about that a lot tonight. We're here to talk about Obama. But they pretty much pushed Romney on the conservatives, and that just didn't go well. We see the result of that. But back to the topic at hand, that's for a different night. Different topic, but and you mentioned earlier about a lot of the recent events, so we will of course bring up Benghazi, and the topic of Benghazi, as you know, has been getting ramped up with attention, and of course rightly so. Did you guys, and this was you know, back in September 2012, does the book cover this at length, the Benghazi issue at length, with more information, and there was more information mounting, would you consider another edition of the book, including the new things coming out about Benghazi?
Well, you know, Benghazi is covered in the book. I wouldn't say it's covered at length because, you know, the purpose of the book is not to necessarily give, like, you know, all the nooks and crannies of every single issue. It's supposed to give you, the reader, a snapshot of every issue that we discuss. We do go into quite a few things that we knew at the point of which this book was published. We note in the book that things are still the investigation is still ongoing. So there is definitely room for more information in a future edition. If you look at when you see the cover of the book, it actually says first term edition on it. So we fully expect that, you know, at the end of 2016 or maybe even sooner, depending on if there actually ends up being an impeachment based on the past few days of information that we've had. We will have a definitive edition of Obama's presidency, and who knows how many reasons that'll bump up to. But, Benghazi is going to have books written about it, all sorts of details that, those books certainly will tell a more complete story. But, you know, this book isn't about necessarily the complete, because so many complex issues from the economy, Obamacare got its own chapter. It's a huge, complex issue. I mean, we've seen how high all the regulations stack up to. But this is trying to get it so that people can get a quick understanding of every issue, so that they know, without a doubt, that Obama is the worst president in history.
Mark?
Exactly. I mean, we could only cover basically the preliminary stages, because remember at that point when we were writing this book, especially like in January, February, there was still a lot of stonewalling going on. This was before, like, we found out that the talking points had been revised 12 times. Goodness, I wish I could get that in the book, but we didn't know about it till last week.
Right.
But it also fits the pattern for, in my view, for Obama's foreign policy. I mean, why did Benghazi happen? Well, let's face it, because he was of the opinion that Al-Qaeda and all those terrorist groups, not a big threat. Be nice to the Muslim Islamists and they'll like us. And so therefore, we don't need a lot of security. Well, guess what? And then, you know, as far as who ordered the stand down and whether or not the military forces were there, that remains to be seen. And we get to find out, I guess, over the next couple of months, was it to protect Hillary that all this cover-up happened, or was it to protect Obama? You know, we'll find out. Stay tuned.
Yeah, it's a very good question, because I know there's been talk about, of course, you know, Hillary running in 2016. I honestly, after some of the health issues that, you know, I've been hearing she's had, I don't know if she would physically be able to come up to me. She did have to step down her post. So I don't know if whether she would be, you know, in any ability to run for the president in 2016. However, it does make a good point that if indeed she does run, it could very well be to protect her height as well.
It could be 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. But remember, of course, Benghazi, as bad as it is because there's 4 dead bodies involved with it, you know, there is a whole section there in the book about foreign and military affairs where, you know, this president has gone about, I mean, almost relentlessly insulting our allies, coddling our enemies. I mean, gratuitous insults, too, to Poland. You know, Poland, of course, been a great ally of ours. Reagan, of course, his big thing to help liberate Poland from communist oppression. And here he goes and, you know, says that, you know, the Russians don't want us to help defend Poland. And so what do we do? Oh, okay, the Russians don't want us to, we won't. Why? Why would Obama, why does he think that it's good to be nice to the Russians and not nice to the Poles? I mean, your guess is as good as mine. But this is the kind of pattern you get in his foreign policy, where our enemies are our friends and our friends are our enemies.
Indeed. And so another topic, of course, that's in there, and I'm going to refer to Reason 29, is the tax dollars for terrorists. And I think this, when I talk about our enemies, you bring up, is would you elaborate on this portion of or this reason in the book, and also comment on the issue of the recent issue of the IRS targeting conservatives such as Tea Party leaders?
Sure, I'll take it. The issue is it's hard to really kind of go too much into it. I mean, what it comes down to is that Obama decided to bypass Congress to give money to the Palestinian Authority, which, their connections to, Hamas and all that stuff. I mean, it's just, basically the Palestinian Authority was connected to terrorists. And, you know, that was roughly $200 million of our tax dollars going to a terrorist organization. I think this kind of connects back to what Mark just previously said about, you know, being nice to the Islamic world, thinking that they're going to be friendly to us and we're not going to be victims of terrorist attacks because of it. Obviously, that's proven not to be true. And all this kind of connects again to Benghazi in the end, because, here Obama has done all these things to try and reach out to the Muslim world. What has it gotten us? It hasn't gotten us all that much. It's an unfortunate thing here because, Obama's foreign policy is kind of, it's silly and I don't know what you could call it. It's been a disaster, to say the least.
Yeah, when you take a look around and see the Muslim world where, you know, whatever we might have thought about, SOBs like the guy who used to run Egypt, okay, but at least, as they say, he was our SOB and he was keeping a lid on the Muslim Brotherhood. Now they're in charge of Egypt, and supposedly during the sequester when we don't have money to open up the White House for tours, we've got to send hundreds of millions of dollars to them for emergency aid. What kind of emergency are they going through except, I guess tolerating the burning of Christian churches? So there's not a lot that makes sense from a rational American perspective. But if your perspective is, which I suspect Obama's is, that America has been the problem in the world, then maybe this makes sense that way. America gets weaker, the world gets better.
Indeed. And, I seen an article the other day, and this gets just a little bit back to the Benghazi issue, is, where they're starting to compare Benghazi with Watergate. Now, I know this, wasn't necessarily a topic in the book, but I would like to make that comparison. I know one of the things is, of course, no one died in Watergate, and so if you want to touch base with what's your thoughts on that comparison?
I guess since I'm the older guy and I actually remember Watergate a little bit, I guess I'll take the first stab at it. It is extraordinarily similar. I think I put a tweet up the other day on the Twitter account that Obama's so Nixon-like, I expect him to bomb Hanoi at any moment. Because think about it, it's in the book there, the enemies list, the White House snitch line where he wanted people to inform on, conservatives that are, I guess, talking bad about Obama. They're using the IRS.
I guess I'm on that list.
You probably are. And, you know, one of the articles of impeachment for Richard Nixon was that he had used the IRS to go after liberal groups. I mean, regardless of how we feel about liberal groups, let's face it, none of us probably consider them our favorite people, but for goodness sake, I don't want the IRS going after these people just because they're liberals. And that's exactly what Nixon was doing, and now it's apparently what Obama's doing now. Do we have the smoking gun? No, we don't. And, of course, I don't think that Obama's got a tape recorder in his White House Oval Office like Nixon did that's going to trip him up. So whether or not we're going to be able to get anything to an impeachment-like circumstance, I'm doubtful. And even if we manage to get articles of impeachment passed out of the House, are we going to get 22 Democrat senators to vote to convict? I'm extraordinarily doubtful of that.
Well, with Boehner, I don't even know if it gets past Boehner. I mean, I haven't had much trust in him lately either, truth be told. I don't think Boehner has – I personally don't think Boehner has the backbone to bring articles of impeachment against Obama, even if there was a smoking gun, per se. I mean, I'd be surprised.
Well, time will tell. It seems like, I mean, with all the things that have happened just this past week, you know, there's certain – I mean, people are talking about it now, and it's like, you know, the I word is out there. And, even if it doesn't happen, I think that this has cast a really dark cloud over Obama's second term. I mean, at the very least, you know, we can say that the magic appears to be kind of subsided with this love affair with Obama and the media, and you know, I mean, and that's kind of what the similar reasons why this book is so important is that, you know, I mean, we knew this guy was corrupt, we knew this guy has been doing a bad job, and a lot of the stuff that's coming out right now happened within the first term, and he got away with it, and basically until after he was safely reelected. So what does that tell you?
Well, definitely. I knew a lot of folks during the election were really fearing a second term, you know, of Obama, and rightly so. You know, I mean, of course we all knew that, you know, if Obama got free reign or got a second term, that it would even free him up more to, you know, try to pass more of the stuff. But, of course, now that you have Obamacare getting about to be funded in 2014 coming more to fruition, you know, I mean, I just – you guys can probably already see I'm not very happy even with the Republican House right now. I mean, so – you know, we'll see. You know, as you said, once things start coming through more about Benghazi, maybe that'll stiffen their spine in order to take action. But of course, then there's also the fear out there that, well, if Obama gets impeached, what have we got there? We've got, we've got VP. You know, so what would they have to, you know, I mean, it's like, well, okay, we've got either Obama or Biden. I mean, where do you turn with that? You know?
Yeah, which is probably, you know, now that you realize it, you realize why Biden was picked, to make sure nobody would ever want Obama to leave office under any kind of circumstance other than the end of his term. But we know, of course, that Obama's planning on doing a lot of things in his second term that he couldn't get away with in his first term. Not that there was too much that he couldn't get away with in his first term with the media
That's
covering
true.
For him. But he said, you know, to, what is it, Medvedev, the president, former president of Russia, who's now, I guess, he's switching offices.
Medvedev?
Yeah, exactly. There he is. That's the guy. He's going to be, Obama said, he'll be more flexible after a second term.
He'd be more flexible after he would get reelected. I recall that. When I seen that make the news, I know there should have been a lot more hay made about that than there was. I mean, seriously, I mean, that was unbelievably, and I don't like to really use the term scary, you know, especially here on Bars Logic, but let me tell you. I mean, to hear him say that, I mean, that's scary. You would think that would have really turned ahead of a lot of the folks, you know, and say, whoa, wait a minute, this guy's ready to give up, you know, our security, if not our sovereignty, you know, over to, frankly, our enemies, if not our enemies, then possibly even the UN, you know, but it didn't. It was there for a while, and then it just kind of was gone, like, you know, just petered out. It just definitely didn't get the attention that it deserved, at least in my opinion.
Like, well, it wasn't until it makes sense because it was only until this past week that Fox News is the only station talking about Benghazi. So, I mean, you know, these things throughout his first term, you know, maybe they get a short mention in the media for a while, but then they'd be forgotten. And it was a constant thing. You know, I mean, a lot of the things that we found for this book, you know, these things were really horrible things that just were forgotten by the time the election came around. And you know, one of my favorite examples is the BP oil spill, a huge example of government incompetence at at the hands of the Obama administration, who in light of what happened with Katrina, under Bush, I mean, should have been his opportunity to say, see what government can do, all these good things to help the people in the event of a natural disaster. And what did we get? We got, it was horrible, the response, and no one talked about it in the election. I mean, I would have thought, Romney would have made mention of the BP oil spill, because that was huge. And, the government had to cover up the true extent of the damage to protect themselves. And, I mean, it was just unbelievable that didn't get a single mention in the election.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that Romney could have done in the election, but he didn't. I mean, I remember in the very first part, because I followed it, the election very closely, and talked a lot about it here on the show. And there's a lot of things he could have talked about. But, of course, when it came to things being touted through the mouth of conservatism, they had Newt Gingrich out there being the conservative mouthpiece. I mean, rightfully so. I mean, he's more conservative, than Mitt Romney would have ever been, and that's probably what – at least in part, why Obama got reelected, because of that. But yeah, with the with that going on, and then he didn't make as much of it. And also, of course, we heard what Reagan said. Watch out when you hear somebody come in and says, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
Well, it's the way, of course, these things, and Matt alluded to this, is that they would report it, talk about it for a day or two, and then, go on to something else. You know that if the BP oil spill had happened during Bush's term or during any Republican's term, it would have been relentlessly hammered on, just like Katrina was. Even though Katrina, of course, anybody who's really looked at the issue knows that the failure in Katrina was not George Bush's. It was the mayor of New Orleans and the governor of Louisiana. They
right.
completely flubbed it. But the way the media reported it was all, mm-hmm. There was actually stories out there, remember, from the real kooks. George Bush dynamited the levees because he hates black people. I mean,
right.
This was ridiculous, but it was reported straight face, and it was reported again and again and again and again. But for Obama, I mean, he's the golden boy. He can't do anything wrong, and anything that happens, you just ignore it. I mean, it's really, really amazing when you read this book. And a lot of stuff, I bet you a lot of people read this, they will not have heard about it at all, or they'll go, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. Wonder why nobody talked about that in 2012. And it's because the media wasn't letting anybody talk about it. And, you're probably right, the Republicans themselves failed to really push the issue. Why didn't Mitt Romney go down to the Gulf to talk about the lousy effects of Obama's policies? Why didn't he also talk about the fact that Obama used the BP oil spill as an excuse to stop offshore oil drilling?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing
didn't
like
that either.
Well.
I just thought the other, Matt, you wanted to...
I think that was a really great point. Obama was throughout his presidency... so far has used every single crisis to for his own political advantage. But, sometimes when these crises go back to his own incompetence, it just gets played up very differently. And I almost hate to say this because it's been kind of a broken record, but, there's the question that you can ask is, if Bush was president, how would the media have reacted? And,
mm-hmm.
It's really sad because the freedom of the press was a freedom that the founders had specifically put in the Constitution, because the press is supposed to hold the government accountable when they do wrong, and it seems like whatever the founders envisioned the press was supposed to be is not what they are today. And it shouldn't take a book like this for people to know what really happened in Obama's presidency. And it's a book. Yeah, I've told someone the other day that this is a book I wish I didn't have to write, because really, I was convinced that Obama was not going to get reelected. You know, I told myself that the polls were all wrong and that they were weighted incorrectly and all that. You know, I figured, well, if Carter didn't get reelected, then Americans are going to similarly, you know, send Obama back home after one term, and that didn't happen.
Carter went against Ronald Reagan. Carter went up against Ronald Reagan. That's why he lost. We didn't have a Ronald Reagan running against Obama. That's the problem.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mark.
Ronald Reagan's a once in a lifetime thing. I mean, it would be nice if every 4 years we could put up another one of him, but still, you still wonder why there wasn't a little bit more fight on some of this stuff. I mean, it came out actually before the election, about a month before the election, that the government had basically ordered Lockheed to not follow the law on layoffs. Remember, the government liberals want to protect the working class, right? So they pass a law that says if you're going to do mass layoffs, you got to let the workers know. I think it's, what is it, Matt, like 90 days or 180 days in front of it. Anyway, a significant period of time. Well, Lockheed was going to fire a whole bunch of people right after the election because they're not doing so well, and also the budget cuts in the military. Now, of course, they didn't want that news coming out just before the election, so they told Lockheed to hold off, you know, go ahead, break the law, it's okay, and release the layoff notices after the election. Mm-hmm. Now, come on. This is you're telling a company to break the law that liberal Democrats wrote supposedly to protect the working class, and here's a guy saying, vote for me because Romney's a rich son of a bitch who's going to take you all your money away. This just blew the whole Obama narrative out of the water, and it got reported. Once again, the news reported it. But did Romney hit on it? No. Did the Republican Party hit on it? No. Did the media relentlessly report about it? No. And so we lost.
Well, and also, you know, we'll go back to Benghazi just because, as I said, it's a big issue today. And that's pretty much how they did it with, you know, wording, you know, the talking points and things of that nature. Because, you know, so September 2012 was right before the – not right before, but it was pretty close. I mean, you only had an election a couple months. And so, you know, you had to hide it, you know, slip it under the rug until after the fact. Of course, now it's too late. I don't know how much impact. I don't know. It could have had more impact if things that are, you know, coming out now would have came out a lot earlier before the election. I mean, I truly don't know how much of an impact. And right now, I'm not thinking it would have made much at that point. You know, if it would came out just like a month or so before the election. And as you guys have pointed out, Val, is that the media would have allowed it anyway. But even if it did, I just don't know if there's enough people who've seen a difference between the two candidates. I mean, especially when you look at their records, you know, to make the alternate choice, you know, against Obama.
Well, I think that, you know, because basically any presidential reelection campaign is a referendum, supposedly, a referendum on the guy in office. You know, did I do a good job for 4 years? But for the Democrats, of course, he hadn't done a good job for 4 years. So the whole purpose, their purpose was to demonize Romney or whomever got nominated. I mean, whoever was going to nominate.
Well, yeah, they would have done whoever. Mm-hmm.
But still, then it was Romney's responsibility to, you know, you're kind of wondering, why did two bloggers have to write this book after the election? Why wasn't this 150 reasons put together by Team Romney with $700 million?
That's a very good point.
You know, it's like.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, but that's where it comes from. It's going to have to come from the grassroots. I mean, to bring this country back on track, I don't think it's going to take a big political party, you know, or one of the, you know, the major political party in the Republican Party to bring the country back. It's going to have to come from the grassroots.
I think you're right about that. And, you know, I mean, we saw it in 2010 with the Tea Party and, you know, I don't know where they were in 2012, but you know, it comes down to, you know, the people recognizing the fact that if they want to keep this country, they got to do something about it. And you know, we recognize the fact that you know, there was something that needed to be done. We needed to get everything that we possibly could into one book that people can look at and read, you know, fairly quickly and say, oh my God, I can't believe this. We can't let this happen again. And, you know, I'm concerned particularly about, you know, not even just about you know, the immediate future, but you know, the next generation and how people choose to remember Obama. And you know, I think that there's people are going to be predisposed to want to remember him as being successful, and I hope that we can stop that from happening. I don't want people to look back on, you know, the Obama years as being this great time where, oh, Obama fixed this country, united us, and saved us from the Great Depression, because none of that happened. It didn't happen that way at all. And, you know, maybe his talking points say that, but that's not what happened here. The country is more divided than ever. People are still
that's
out
true.
Of work. There are less people working now than when he took office. I mean, people point to the unemployment rate and say, oh, wow, look at that, 7.5%. He's doing such a great job. But, I mean, you know, I mean, the labor force participation rate is, it's like 63.3% right now, and it was 65-some% when he took office. So, I mean, do the math. I mean,
well,
this country is in poor shape.
5.3% unemployment average, wasn't it?
Under Bush, it was about, I think it was 5.2%, and it
yes,
was like 4.4% at its lowest, and
right.
You know, it started. But the thing is, it started going up when Democrats took back Congress. So, you know, is there a connection there? I think so.
Well, a couple of things. One, I want to bring back about the Tea Party, and I think what happened with the Tea Party in 2012 is I think they got, I don't want to say disillusioned, but I do say they got disappointed in some of their key folks who they helped get elected. The person who comes top of mind for me is Nikki Haley, and I also think in a sense, you know, this may surprise some folks, but I think some or many actually are disappointed in Rubio, especially when it comes to immigration. So I think they're really that they've got really disappointed with, you know, some of the people that the grassroots, the Tea Party got in. And as to Bush, you know, we all remember Bush say, look, you know, when people would talk about him, it's like, history would judge my decisions. History would judge it. And that's what you guys are talking about here with your book, and how is history going to judge Obama after, you know, as you said, in the next generation.
Well, I hope history gets it right, because you know, we're not going to be around when the ultimate assessment is made. And you know, I mean, it took you know, maybe a generation or so before people really started to see Truman for what he was. You know, I mean, he wasn't held in high regard for, you know, immediately after his presidency. You know, it's going to take time for all these issues to percolate with, you know, in the history books and you know, academia. So, I mean, the time to get the record straight is now. We have this. This is a necessity because, you know, the country is divided. It's as divided as I think it's ever been, probably since the Civil War. We have to do something. And this is important, because I don't know how much more of this our country can take, because we've gotten to the point now where, you know, there's almost like at least two different truths. It's not one truth anymore. There's two. There's the truth that Democrats see, and there's the truth that Republicans see. And we need to get people to put politics aside and look at the facts. And this book puts together all the facts. You know, if people want to read it and make it their own different assessment, that's their choice. But they should look at the facts and try and see them objectively, so that you know, they can just make an informed decision.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, as they say, the old phrase is, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts. These are facts. I mean, these are not opinions about what happened. These are things reported, multiply sourced. How many sources we got on this thing, Matt? It's more than 500 or something like that.
You got over 500 endnotes in this book, and so it's people can't say that we didn't do our research.
And the thing, this is the facts. This is what happened. Now, you can come up with maybe all kinds of excuses for Obama if you want. That's, you know, anybody's business. But what happened is what happened. He said this, and that actually happened. Remember, like one of the things we point out in there, his stimulus was supposed to prevent unemployment from going above 8%. That's how he sold it in 2009. That's how all the Democrats sold it. Well, of course, as we point out, 43 months of above 8% unemployment. And then when it finally, after 43 months, dropped below 8%, it's really only because people left the labor force. And we also tie in other issues there, the fact that disability payments have massively increased, welfare payments massively increased. I mean, all this stuff are facts. So what we don't want to do, what we didn't want to do, was sit there going, is Media Matters for America going to write the first draft of Obama's history and everybody's going to believe that 20 years from now? Let's write a book that says, this is what really happened. You can assess it any way you want, but here's the truth. And, you know, we feel that if the truth is out there, eventually people will assess Obama properly as a failed president. Now, theoretically, yes, in the next 3 years he could turn around and become great. Let's face it, we all doubt that. So right now, his first term is a failure. There's just no doubt about it. By his own terms, by what he promised, he's a failure.
Now, one of the things, you know, driving around, you know, the roads, going to work, you know, going whatever, you know, drop my daughter off, things here and there. We see gas here. I don't know what gas is there, but I know it's up to $3.75 here. It's been higher where I'm at. And I remember during the election when Newt Gingrich was running, he proposed ways for America to bring gas prices down to $2.50 a gallon. And we're bringing a Bush, and with the media, the way the media reacted with Bush is, of course, we all remember how the Bush administration was harangued for the gas prices during his administration. You guys cover that in depth in the book, or
actually,
that would be in the second edition?
We did, actually. We addressed the fact that, you know, Obama, despite his claims, he can have an impact on gas prices. You know, gas prices went up to about $4 a gallon under Bush, but by the time that he left office, it was actually, I believe, under $2 a gallon. And, you know, when you look at the information,
during the Bush administration.
Right. But, you know, the thing is, like, well, how did he do that? Well, he lifted the oil drilling ban, and that sent shockwaves through the whole, you know, with OPEC and all that stuff, and all of a sudden gas prices started going down. You know, OPEC doesn't want to compete with, you know, American sourced energy, so they have to lower their prices so that we'll be less inclined to introduce more oil into the market and basically reduce what the money that they're getting. And it worked. On the flip side, when Obama took office, you know, he found the opportunity with the BP oil spill to ban drilling again. And what happened after that? Gas prices, which were going back up, you know, spiked even quicker. And here we are now with teetering around or very close to $4 a gallon again, with no relief in sight. And you know, I drive about 75 miles a day to get to and from work every day. You know, these gas prices are killing me. And Obama has the ability to influence the market, and he's chosen not to. And why is he doing that? Well, he's got his green energy buddies that have donated lots of money to his campaign that he's got to think about. And, well, there you have it. It's really sad because we are paying the price for basically his incompetence and his, you know, so that he can, you know, fill the pockets of his cronies.
And to get to Matt's point there, remember, in the book we point out, and this is from a study done by, once again, highly sourced assertion here, Obama's donors got $21,000 back for every dollar they donated to his campaign. That's where the money's going. It's going to Obama's buddies. But also, you got to remember, Obama is extraordinarily strange in this because he actually has provided money for oil production. Unfortunately, he provided it to Brazil. He got the Export-Import Bank to load a bunch of money to Brazil so they can increase their oil production.
Didn't he mention something about that we want to be one of Brazil's biggest consumers of their oil or something like that?
Yeah, he said that. He wants us to be their best customers. It's like,
right, their best
customers.
Again, that's right.
Yeah, and once again, why wasn't this attacked upon? I mean, here's, you know, the Republicans. We're the party of drill, baby, drill. We're the party of $2 a gallon gasoline. And it doesn't get hit upon. But, okay, once again, we lost 2012. Let's go forward. And getting back to that point that you said there, that, you know, it's the grassroots, well, that's, you know, partly what Matt and I do here. It's why we've been blogging so long. I mean, we thought about packing it on the blogging after, you know, George Bush's terms and stuff like that, because we figured, you know, we started the blog to help him get reelected, then we converted it to a general conservative libertarian blog after that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but then we've realized, no, we're citizen journalists. We have a responsibility to if we can, get as much of the truth out there as we can, because only by the action of regular folks like us, because, you know, Matt and I, we both work for a living. None of it, neither of us are, you know, rich, independent media types who have $1 million in the bank. We're just a couple of guys trying to get the truth out as best we can.
Well, you mentioned, you know, journalists, citizen journalists. You definitely check out the patriotjournalist.com, www.patriotjournalist.com, because that's what they do. Or, you know, I'm a part of the group. But that's what they do. You know, we consider, you know, ourselves citizen journalists. So definitely, you know, when you got some time, you know, check it out. If you see Mark Price, you tell him I said hello. But it's a great it's a Twitter team. And there's all kinds of good stuff on there as well. They do more than just, you know, just Twitter activity. So definitely check them out. I think you'd be impressed. Let's see. I'm looking at my questions here. I got to pull them up. I really need to pull my glasses up on this thing. So, could you give? We talked about some of the topics, some of the reasons that you had during the book. And of course, you know, I'm not saying read off a 150 reasons, but you know, if you could give the audience just a short list of some of the other reasons in the book besides what we talked about tonight, perhaps some of your favorites. So Matt, we'll go to you, and then Mark.
Well, you know, it's hard to say that there's any particular favorites, but, you know, I mean, there's so many things that, you know.
Yeah, favorites is probably wasn't the best term to use, I guess.
Well, I can tell you this, that, you know, probably I think the biggest chapter we've got is the economy, and there's so many different entries into that chapter that's got some great information. You know, I mean, how he kept the gas prices high, which we just talked about, you know, the fact that he really did have the largest tax increase on the middle class. I mean, there's all sorts of things in this book that, you know, I mean, it's great information for even people who consider themselves, you know, well-informed to just, you know, have the facts all in one place. You know, we've got all the information about, you know, Obama being the food stamp president and how, you know, for every person that's gotten a job on the Obama economy, 75 have gone on food stamps. You know, this is all great information. And we have this for all sorts of things. You know, I would say that, you know, moving away from the economy, one of my favorite entries, I think, is the one where, you know, we point out that killing bin Laden is actually something that Obama really screwed up on, not so much in the raid that killed him, but the way that Obama rushed to claim credit for everything when he could have waited a while and allowed the intelligence community to assess all the intelligence that they had gathered from the Bin Laden compound, where he actually could have done a significant amount of damage to Al-Qaeda. Now, granted, he campaigned claiming that Al-Qaeda was decimated and was on its heels and all that, but, you know, he had a legitimate opportunity to do that, but instead he announced it to the world that Osama was dead, and, you know, lo and behold, everyone was alerted and people could move around and do all these things to make sure that, you know, any intelligence that they had there was going to be useless very quickly. You know, lots of stuff like that. There's so many things in here. I almost hate to pick anything out, but, you know, we cover a whole wide range of issues, and they're all divided into chapters so that it's easy for anyone to just look through and find what they need to. If, you know, if they're in the middle of an argument, they can pick up the book and say, "Well, hold on a second. Oh, here you go."
Yeah. Now, my thing, because lately, I don't know, call me paranoid, but especially after the last week to 10 days, but really for the last couple of months, I've been getting more on the strict constitutionalist thing. I think that's why I stood up and cheered so much when Rand Paul did his filibuster in the Senate there. Mm-hmm. I am getting really, really concerned about the way this government is just really, really digging into unconstitutional activities here. I mean, you know, Nixon had his enemies list, so does Obama, but then there's the White House snitch mine, there's all the data mining, and then, of course, you know, remember, of course, our liberals were just, can't have all this, you know, what do they call it? They call it domestic spying when Bush had that signals intelligence
program
to intercept calls overseas. But you know, as intercepting calls overseas, I figure if you're calling somebody in Waziristan, you're not calling them for the time of day. You're calling them to coordinate a terrorist activity. But Obama's thing is, and what is it? Here, let me just go through the book real quick here. There it is. The American Civil Liberties Union, there's been a 64% growth in electronic spying by the United States government since Obama took office. Remember, that's the ACLU saying that. That's an ultra-liberal legal organization. And they're the ones saying, and I'm just going to myself, why are they doing this? Why do they want so much data on us? And now we begin to see with the revelations of the IRS, demanding all this particular information about the Tea Party and conservative and anti-debt groups. It's just beginning to worry me that this guy, supposedly a constitutional scholar, doesn't even know what a law is. And he just wants power over us to make certain that we do what he wants us to do. Because you got to think about it. You're a little Tea Party organization in the middle of the American nowhere there, and all of a sudden you get a letter from the IRS threatening you. What are you going to do? I mean, unless you've got lots of guts, you're going to fold. Because let's face it, who amongst us has the money to fight off the IRS? That's what this is for. This is intimidation. All of us, I think, worry. Should I tweet that? Should I put that blog post up?
Should I do a blog talk radio show about it?
Exactly. You know, it gets a little worrisome because you do just go, you know, who knows what these idiots are going to do? And it might be nice to say that if I get, you know, really wrapped up in this, that, you know, some richer conservative organization will come to my rescue. But what if they don't? You know, so it's just, you wonder how many people are not speaking out these days because they're going, you know, just not worth the trouble.
You know, back to the domestic spying angle, you know, one of the things that we did manage to get into the book in our second term preview chapter was the Boston Marathon bombing, because, you know, in the last few days before we finished the book, there was a lot of information that came out that kind of pointed to the fact that, you know, the federal government really dropped the ball when it came to the terrorists that you know, that bombed the Boston Marathon. You know, lots of things that were missed. I mean, you know, they're basically on a terror watch list, and they were just, you know, somehow, for some reason, we just didn't do enough. And, you know, people always, people who don't like George W. Bush always point to some presidential briefing that was rather vague and say, oh, look, see, he was warned. He should have done something. You know, we had the Sarnoff brothers, you know, they were on a terror watch list. They were, heck, they were getting welfare and food stamps and all that stuff, too. Apparently, being a potential terrorist is good for getting government benefits under Obama. But, you know, I mean, it's this kind of thing, you know. Why weren't the dots connected? Was Obama's, you know, reaching out to the Muslim world thing, did that make him soft these guys should have been under surveillance, and they weren't. And you have to ask why they weren't. And I think the answer is out there, you know, we'll find out more information soon. We only had maybe a few days after the bombing to include that, and so there's only so much that we got in there. But, you know, the stuff's going to come out sooner or later.
Exactly. And why did, you know, people who went to Chechnya, which is not exactly a vacation paradise, not get watched while some American who's demanding a tax cut gets watched? I mean, what are the priorities here? It seems to me like they're more worried about regular Americans than they are about people who really actually want to kill us.
Yeah, they're definitely, it seems like, aiming their sights more inside on the citizens than they are to the folks outside the country looking to do us harm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you put yourself in a group that has the word patriot in it, you know, the IRS is all on top of you. But, you know, if you're possibly involved in terrorist activity and you're on a terror watch list, you know, you can basically, you know, under Obama, think that you got free reign to do what you're going to do. I mean, this is bizarre. I mean, how would you think that any American government would regardless of, you know, who the president is, would allow something like that to happen? I mean, you know, things have changed since 9/11, and you would think that we would be much more vigilant about this stuff, but, you know, it seems like since, you know, Bush left office that we've gotten slack, you know, and it's this politically correct attitude that's kind of permeated through the Obama administration that, you know, we're not gonna make Muslims feel like they're being profiled or whatever. I don't know, but it's really disturbing, and sometimes I just shake my head and think, man, we still got three more years of this.
Well, you know, hopefully there'll be some. That was redundant. Yeah. Well, there's in this 2014. I think that's where folks should be working their efforts for now. Is let's work hard. Hopefully, get a lot of liberty-minded folks together, constitutionally minded folks together. And you know, we need a movement here to go against the elite politicians. I've said this many times on the show. I think this is what we need, and you know, go up against. The elites and Obama and the liberals is that, you know, it's going to have to be, come from the ground up. You know, it's going to have to be en masse because, I mean, I was shocked at first when Obama, I mean, I knew he was going to, but I was still kind of shocked that he won. But it's going to have to take a massive movement for us to get to do it. And I think it's going to have to start with 2014. But, of course, you have to start in 2013. You can't wait until months before the election to try to do something and expect that you're going to get results.
No, that's exactly it. I mean, that's what, you know, we the people have to do. Armed with the truth, books like our book and, you know, organizations like yours and shows like yours, armed with the truth, the people actually have to have the courage to go out there and speak the truth and elect people who will go into Congress and speak the truth. I was actually listening a little bit to Daryl Issa grilling Eric Holder today, and you know, basically the question was along the lines of, why did you redact all the information? And Holder was about to give a typical mealy-mouthed lying answer, and Issa just cut him off and said, because you didn't want us to know the details. You know, and that's basically, we need people. Issa's got some guts. I like that. You know, Rand Paul's got some guts. We do have some people in there that are on our side, and I love
that.
Yeah,
there are
some.
Mm-hmm.
We need more of them, though. That's what we need. We need people to be courageous and elect people who will be courageous once in office and then kick them out after 4 years because they always get worn out after a while.
Yeah, well, and, of course, we need people to buy our book and learn all the facts so that they can inform their liberal friends what the truth is.
And speaking of that, I'll bring up this question. With Obama's a record, why do you think that some folks still support him, and do you think any of them would read your book? And if so, why would they?
I would love to think that they would read the book, but, you know, so far our experience is that Obama fans had absolutely no interest in reading anything that might tarnish their view of him. It's too bad because you know, I ran a blog called Blogs for Bush, but that didn't stop me from saying I disagree with Bush on this issue or that issue. This kind of blind worship is not a good thing for our country. And I think that, you know, Obama himself, he surrounds himself with people who disagree with him, you know, on everything. We can't let that happen. We got to hold our leaders accountable, whether they're in your party or not. So I strongly suggest that if you're a liberal and you love President Obama, the least you could do is read the book and attempt to argue everything in there. If you give that a shot, I can at least respect your view on if you disagree. But don't claim that the book is not well researched or anything like that, or don't just trash it even though you haven't read it.
Now, do you guys put? I mean, I haven't read the back of it. Have you guys put sources in there where you get your information?
Oh yeah, it's all there.
Okay.
In the back of the book, there's about 500 endnotes that throughout the book where everything is sourced. So you can check our sources if you want to go through all 500 of them and make sure that we weren't making stuff up. But it's all there.
It's all there with the links. With the web link. So if you don't think that we read that article right, take the link, put it in your browser, and look yourself. I mean, like I said, this is not opinion. This is fact. Now, how you want to use those facts, that's your business. But these are the facts.
And is there a website the folks can go to, maybe if they have any some comments or, of course, go to where to buy the book?
Well, you can buy the book on Amazon.com. It's available in paperback and as an ebook. We have a Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/victorybooks and join our fans there. And we post new stuff all the time. And of course, interviews like this we alert everyone to. And that's where you can find us. And of course, we also blog at blogsforvictory.com.
Blogsforvictory.com.
I'm just
reiterating it for the people who'll be listening to it on the archives. Amazon. Do you guys do Kindle as well? Or because I've got a friend who he's an author, and they're doing. I'm not a big Kindle fan, to be honest. I collect books, I still like the paper bound, even though I hate that. I'm an environmentalist, and one of the things, or conservationist, whatever people want to call us. So at least if someone's going to use a tree, at least use it to write a book, I say. I'm a fan of industrialized hemp, but I'd love to see, because I know there's some talk about it. I think Rand Paul even talked about it a little bit, legalizing industrialized hemp, in which, people need to realize you can't not get high on smoking hemp. I could digress into a History Channel show. They're trying to talk about the Founding Fathers, and they're trying to, blast the Founding Fathers and saying, oh, my gosh, the Founding Fathers grew hemp, and so they must have been smoking, marijuana all the time. I'm like, really? You're the History Channel? What kind of research do you do where you're presuming that because these Founding Fathers grew hemp that they were smoking it and get high, because you can't get high on smoking hemp? But I digress. I'm sorry.
Was that the History Channel, or was that Dazed and Confused?
No, that was the History. Yeah, that was the History Channel. I'm not joking. I was watching something about the History Channel. Something on the History Channel about the Founding Fathers and the Constitution, whatever. And they're talking about, they were getting drunk and getting high while they're making the Constitution, this and that. And I'm sure there might have been some alcohol involved. But what they're trying to do is link them growing hemp with them smoking marijuana. And it's like those two are exclusive. Just because you grow hemp does not necessarily mean that. Because they're trying to make it as if they were smoking the hemp and getting high. It's like, well, you should do further research, because you can't get high from smoking hemp. You have to smoke like an acre of hemp in order to get a buzz from it.
Well, I've never smoked an acre of hemp before, but I understand that somebody found George Washington's recipe for whiskey, and I am looking forward to one of these days drinking a bottle of that.
No, that would be good.
That would be good. To me, it would be a patriotic duty. But, you're right. The History Channel is not necessarily the best place for history. But, no, I like my paper books, too, but this is available on Kindle. So, you can download it. You can buy it. You can do whatever. Any way you want to get this book, get it, because I really think everybody should read it, because if you want to know what happened during the first term of Obama's administration, it's all there. It's easily accessible. It's, like I said, Matt said, nicely organized amongst sections. And it's sourced out the wazoo. There's I went down, well, Matt was saying more than 500. I was going, really? And it's like 511 exactly. So 511 sources on 150 reasons. I think this thing is pretty rock solid.
Well, great. And I can't wait to be able to get the opportunity to read through it myself. I know I think I've only contacted with you gentlemen a couple weeks ago, and I really appreciate you coming on to the show. And let me know if either one of you, like I mentioned, my friend's an author, if anyone of you likes fantasy fiction. I know he's promoting a book. I'm actually talking with him, the co-author, about the possibility of getting them on the show. It's a World of Shandahar. So it's a pretty good series. It's kind of Tolkien-esque. So if anybody enjoys fantasy fiction, Blood of Ancillar is the name of the book. And that's also on Amazon as well. But also back to you guys is, I still got some more questions. You mentioned earlier, I'd like to elaborate a little bit more about the goal of the book and what impact do you want to see the book has.
Well, it's interesting. That's an interesting question, because the impact of this book, I hope will go on, much longer than the next 3 years and the years after. I really just feel that it's important for the next generation to understand that this guy, no matter how much academia and the media try and paint him as some great president that he really wasn't, that, you know, there are so many bad things that happened in his presidency that were just ignored. And, you know, maybe people that are around today didn't get the benefit of having that stuff appropriately shown, but, you know, it's, you know, future generations that are going to have a different kind of a filter. You know, time will kind of allow for the biases that people have right now to not be an issue. You know, like right now there's people that voted for Obama. They thought they were a part of something historic, and they really, really, really want to believe that he's done a great job. And they're never going to admit that the guy has just been a failure. People tend to have stronger opinions of presidents that they have, you know, a recent memory of, you know, good or bad. You know, a lot of liberals call George W. Bush the worst president in history, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I could give them plenty of words to prove them wrong on that. So, I think Obama has earned the title. The book kind of explains it all. I mean, I don't know how many other presidents could fill a book just like this. You know, I would say that, you know, people who say Bush was such a bad president, you know, how many reasons could they come up with? You know, I mean, we've heard the same stuff over and over again, and, you know, lied about WMDs to get us into Iraq, and, you know, they talk about the economy. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how many different investigations were done to look into whether or not there was any intelligence manipulation? There was at least a few congressional investigations. They all turned out, you know, there was nothing there. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
we know that the economic collapse that happened in 2008 had its roots in basically Clinton-era policies that allowed for,
yep.
Mortgages to be given to people who couldn't,
exactly.
who really couldn't afford to pay.
Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Still my thunder. Now, go ahead.
So it's like, you know, I mean, things got to be put into context. And I'm not just trying to make excuses for Bush and just throw everything on Obama. I mean, we recognize the fact that, you know, Obama was given a not so great economy. That wasn't Bush's fault, but, you know, those were the cards that Obama was dealt. But and what did he do with them? You know, he's the guy that ran and said, "I'm gonna fix this. Everything's gonna be great. Everything's gonna be wonderful if you elect me." And things just got worse. You know, he told the country that, you know, if you pass my stimulus, things are gonna turn around. There's gonna be all these jobs created, and you know,
mm-hmm.
we still have a deficit of jobs. I think but there's like these people that just really want to believe in him, and I don't know what they're smoking. It's obviously not hemp, but, you know, they're smoking something. They're smoking something that's making them think that Obama's done such a fantastic job, or that anywhere where he's come up short is not his fault, but Bush's. And we got to
be Republican. Well, and that's it. You know, the thing about Obama is that by his own terms, he is a failure. He has failed by what he said he was going to do. He didn't say, "I'll try to do this." He didn't say, "I'll try to make the economy better. I'll try to improve race relations. I'll try to make the Muslims like us." He said, "Because I get elected and I'll do the things I'm going to do, all of this will change for the better." None of it
mm-hmm.
has changed for the better.
Right.
And, you know, sort of in my mind now, if you think about it a little bit, Obama is going to be the anti-McCarthy, because, of course, Joe McCarthy was right in the 1950s. There really were communists all over the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
But the initial treatments of McCarthy right after he, you know, was forced basically.
Well, McCarthy
has a knife.
They even coined a term.
Exactly. And that's it, because his enemies wrote the first stories about him and made him out to be this horrible, horrible person. And that's how he's gone into the history books, and you're never going to change that. I mean, it's just the way it is. We didn't want Obama to go into the history books as a stunning success without anybody saying a peep really otherwise. 150 Reasons Why Barack Obama is the Worst President in History is an indisputable collection of facts. Once again, you can not like the facts, you can try and interpret them a different way, but these are the facts. By his own terms, he has failed. And, you know, we hope that this is, you know, really just kind of an opening shot in people really assessing Obama based not upon what we conservatives would have liked him to do, but even on the terms of liberalism, what our liberals say they want. he's done mm-hmm. terrible. Things like in the book there, Latino, African-American, female unemployment, much higher than before.
Right.
Remember, he's the guy that got all the Latino, female, and youth and African-American votes.
Right,
he
and
failed
they get
them.
The highest rates of unemployment than anybody.
Exactly, and he failed them on his term that he promised them. Now, of course, then you and I and Matt were going jaw-dropped. Well, why did they keep voting for him in 2012? That's another story, and I think Matt's on the right thing. It's a psychological thing with them now. They voted for him. He was this good-looking, apparently articulate guy in 2008. He was the fresh face, and people don't like to admit they were wrong. Let's face it. When I make a mistake, the last thing I want to say to somebody is, oops, I screwed up. Nobody likes to do that, and I think that's a lot of it. But still, that will fade as time goes on. As Obama leaves office and time goes on, that sort of emotional attachment will fade. Then there's going to become the assessments, but I don't want people to be able to write assessments in 2020, 2025, without at least having to acknowledge the facts are out there.
And Rick, I do see some folks there in the queue. We're not in the queue, but on the switchboard listening to the show. And, of course, callers and chat participation are welcome, as always, on the show. And if folks want to just listen in on the interview, that's great. But I'll pause if you'd like to chime in. Just press the one on your number dial, and I'll let you in as soon as we can. So when if you're on Skype, just send me a message either on Facebook or in the chat here on Blog Talk Radio. That would be great as well. So let's bring it back to you gentlemen, Mark and Matt. I want to bring up some issues that I know it's going to sound familiar to many of the folks listening to this show is when I bring up the topics of the NDAA, Agenda 21, and, of course, gun control. So we could take each one of those topics separately. So let's start off first with the NDAA.
You want that, Matt, or you want me to give it a shot?
Why don't you go for it?
All right. Well, of course, the NDAA was the National Defense Authorization Act, the sort of issue that all through from 2001 to 2009, according our Democrats were all hot and heavy about because of things like Gitmo and renditions and what they called domestic spying, which, of course, was actually signals intelligence to intercept communications to overseas. And it gets into the new defense bill signed by Obama. Our liberals make a little bit of stink about it, but here's the thing about Obama. In that NDAA, there was, of course, the thing about the indefinite detention of American citizens, which our liberals from 2001 to 2009 said you just can't possibly do, even if you capture them in a terrorist camp over in the middle of the Middle East. You just can't do that. You can't do that. It's wrong. It's destroying our Constitution. And Obama, of course, we're not going to do that. We're going to restore the Americans' protections under the Constitution. So the NDAA gets passed, it has it in there. Okay, so you'd figure that's a little strange that Obama would go ahead and sign that, but he did. But then it goes to court and gets sued. People says, no, we can't do this. Okay, so then a court, federal court, rules that that part of the NDAA that allows indefinite detentions, it's unconstitutional, can't do it. So you'd figure now Obama would go, here's my perfect thing to carry out my promise, I'll just leave it alone. Nope, he files an emergency injunction and gets it to allow indefinite detentions to go on. And this is the kind of thing that just has the weird disconnect. Okay, here's the liberals against this for 8 years. Obama gets in. They might make a little peep about it every now and again, but they're basically not too concerned about it. And here's Obama breaking his promise again. And once again, it also ties into my big worry about this thing is why is he now so intent on getting authorization to indefinitely detain us? You know, so it's just, you know, it's a weird Orwellian, scary thing, and I'm kind of disappointed in our liberals that they didn't keep up their supposed opposition. But now you can see what their opposition was. It wasn't to people being arrested. It was to Bush being president. No. Not that Obama's president. He's like, well, he's only going to arrest Tea Partiers anyway, right? So I guess they're okay with it.
Matt, I don't know if you want to chime in on the NDAA portion. If not, that's fine. We can move over. And these are things that we've talked about, you know, on the show. You know, had a couple shows on here about that, and so that's why I want to bring it up and bring your book into the conversation. And what about Agenda 21?
I'm sorry, what was that about? What did you ask about?
Oh, I was going to see what kind of coverage you guys have. Or this might be a topic for the second edition of Agenda 21.
I think that's probably going to have to make the next edition. I think there's going to be a lot of things in the next edition. I mean, when you look at what's happened recently, I mean, geez, I don't know. We'd be up to like 200 by now, I think. It's amazing the way things are starting to happen really quickly now. And I'm constantly because now we have this current book out, We didn't envision doing this book until after the election, so we had to kind of backtrack and do all this research about the previous 4 years. Thankfully, now we have the benefit of knowing that there may very well be another edition. So, you know, we're constantly looking at everything that happens, you know, as it happens, and just, you know, doing what we can to make sure that. Towards the end of Obama's presidency, there's going to be much more information that would just add to the narrative and support our thesis here. It's been kind of fun at the same time it's been depressing. You know, like looking back at the previous 4 years, it's just like, you know, I was really depressed after the election. I thought this will be like catharsis. This will be a way to really just get all that frustration about the election off my chest. And, you know, like it did to a degree, but at the same time, it's like, wow, I can't believe that people actually voted for this guy. I mean, what's wrong with this country? And, you know, maybe now, but since there isn't another election, that he's going to be on the ballot ahead of us, people will be more willing to say, you know, maybe this guy just isn't all that he was cracked up to be. And, you know, I mean, we can hope that people will start to see it. The media is finally starting to say, hey, they're going after us now. Maybe we should stop making this guy sound like he's the second coming of Christ or something. I don't know. It's been an interesting process, and you know, we're going to continue to document the rest of his presidency, and hopefully have the definitive resource on his presidency from every angle. You know, I said before that, you know, there are books about different stuff. You know, there's been a book about Fast and Furious. There's going to be a book on Benghazi. You just know there will be.
Mm-hmm.
There's been books on everything. You know, we try to cover everything. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of times, you know, I hear people say, you only have 150, there's got to be so much more. And
someone actually sent me that message on Facebook earlier today.
And you know, we tried to have some kind of a minimum level of, you know, what, like just kind of certain requirements that things needed to meet. And, you know, we had a pretty extensive list, and, you know, we would go over and we talked about it. And, you know, some things like, well, yeah, that's not good. You know, it's certainly not a good thing, but does it really merit inclusion in the book? You know, we had – go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's really why Agenda 21 isn't exactly mentioned in there, because – though you can say Obama's push to make gas prices high and therefore force us out of our cars is in line with Agenda 21's, you know, basic goals, we couldn't really say Obama was trying to do Agenda 21. I mean, we couldn't really say that he definitely was doing this. You couldn't find in Obama's statement, I'm going to enforce Agenda 21. I mean, clearly, let's face it, he's a globalist liberal, so he's obviously, you know, you can almost be certain he's in favor of it. But we wanted things that were factual, that we could really just say, definitely, this is what Obama said he was going to do, this is what happened when he did it, or this is what he said he was going to do, and he didn't do it. So it's just, that's, you know, that's kind of the way of the book is, what did Obama do that is factual that he either screwed up or didn't do when he promised he would do it? I mean, we'll see what he does over the next 3 years. And if we could tie him into Agenda 21, yeah, it's going to make it into the second term edition. But right now, we just didn't feel like there was anything strong enough to really say, okay, let's put Agenda 21 in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things change, and, you know, sometimes it's like, well, this hasn't happened yet. And, you know, we kind of had to just cut things out towards the end and decide, because, you know, yeah, I mean, we could have found 300 things if we really wanted to. And, you know, some things, you know, certainly things are strong, there are certain reasons that are stronger than others. But, you know, it is the entirety put together that paint, you know, the ultimate picture of Obama. And, you know, it's not to say that, you know, there might be things that we missed that will eventually be included. But, you know, we had to have a cutoff somewhere. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a point where one of us is going to wake up in the morning and think, oh, man, we should have put this in the book.
Do you recall some of the topics that didn't make it, that possibly may make it to the, you know, in the second edition, of course, other than Agenda 21?
You know, I was wondering if you were going to ask that question. I thought about pulling up the file with all that stuff in it, but, you know, actually, I can't think of anything at the moment. I don't know, Mark, if you can think of anything that we cut out.
No. Mostly just expansions upon what we're already seeing. I mean, obviously, the second term edition will have the IRS issue in it. That came out. I mean,
right.
You know, I was always suspecting that he was doing something like that because Bill Clinton did it, you know, so I'm just figuring, okay, you got, but, you know, there was no story about it. So, once again, we wanted to keep it real factual. So, really, I just see mostly expansions upon what we've already got in there, and then Lord only knows what this guy's going to do over the next 3 years or what's going to further come out about what happened in the last 4 years. You know, I definitely see more and more along the Big Brother aspects of Obama continuing on.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I don't expect the economy to be in good shape in 2016. I'm one of the complete doubters about this economy. I'm just waiting for the next crash. So, you know, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure that will be expanded too.
Actually, you know, there is something that I just remembered that we did write for the book that had been in it up to the last draft, but was taken out for no other reason than to bring us to a nice even number, was Obama's support for the Ground Zero Mosque, as it was referred to, which, you know, we felt that it was definitely an example of Obama being completely out of the mainstream of you know, of American, you know, values. But, you know, I think in the end we felt that, you know, we had to stick to things that were more connected to policy and things like that. I still think it's something that is a great example of just how out of the mainstream Obama is, and it certainly connects well to his whole belief that, you know, being more friendly to the Muslim world is somehow going to be seen as a gesture of goodwill by terrorist organizations. But, you know, it was one that we debated over, and in the end, it didn't make the final cut, you know, but could it show up in a later edition? It's certainly possible, but, you know, that's definitely one where it was a tough call, and it certainly has its merit to be included, but in the end didn't make it.
Debated over and rewrote, I think, about 7-8 times as we,
you know,
we kept pondering.
How long
where,
did it
where
take you guys
go
to do it?
Well, we started this, like I said, November 8th, and what it is we both decided, okay, let's just throw together whatever we can just think up off the top of our heads, as it were, you know, just start
mm-hmm.
our own lists, and then when we got those lists together, you know, well, there was some duplication, obviously, but
right.
Basically at that point we were at, I don't know, Matt may be correcting me on this, like at 70 or 80 right there of individual, unique reasons, and then we just started both writing what we had already found, sifting it to make certain, you know, sometimes you'd find something that was, you know, three similar things, okay, that's going to wind up being one entry after a while. And it kept growing because we kept on finding more stuff, including things that, you know, I'll freely admit, I did not know. I'm just going, I'm a fairly informed guy. I watch politics, but I was like going, are you effing kidding me? He did that? And, you know, that got into the book.
I'm glad you refrained from doing the whole word. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, and pardon my French, you know, it's like, but I am an ex-sailor, so I do have a little bit of that vulgarity in me. And it's just, I was, you know, like one of the things that it was fairly small, but it did make it into the book because it fits the pattern, and that was the smallpox vaccine. Uncle Sam keeps enough smallpox vaccine to vaccinate all of us in case an enemy figures out how to weaponize smallpox, which is a good thing. I think we can all agree. Good. Glad we have it. But then all of a sudden this massive Democrat donor gets a no-bid contract to provide a type of vaccine that can't be tested on humans, so we don't know if it works. And it costs, I think the normal dose is $3 a dose, and then in the book I think it's $253 for each dose of this stuff, $253. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, why did that not make the news, you know? It's just, but it, you know, it, well, it did, obviously, because that's where I found it. But once again, it didn't get out there. But these are the kind of things we were finding. And Matt and I, we're still collecting data as time goes on because we know there's going to be a second term edition. And so as a story comes up, it goes into the file. And as time goes on, we're going to start writing up entries, and there will be a revised edition of 150 Reasons Why Barack Obama is the Worst President in History. And Matt's right, it might be 300 reasons by 2017.
And one of the issues, of course, we've got to bring up is gun control, especially, you know, at the Sandy Hook and what the reaction is. Of course, you've heard the phrase, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. And what to try to do with gun control after that?
I tell you, it amazes me that you know, someone who claims to be a constitutional, I don't know, teacher, scholar, or whatever he claimed he was, you know, could not only attempt to infringe upon our Second Amendment rights, but he actually is trying to do so by bypassing Congress altogether. It's you know, it fits this pattern of Obama realizing at times when he can't do something through constitutional means that he's just gonna say, well, forget about Congress, I'm just gonna just do it, you know. And
what about Obamacare? Oh, go ahead. We'll get to back to Obamacare.
We'll all get back to Obamacare.
You know, it's depressing because, you know, we're seeing the role of the presidency change right before our eyes, and, you know, he's establishing precedent.
More like
where,
a king?
it's killing me because, like, you know, it's hard to even say you recognize the office of the presidency as being this, you know, I mean, remember, the founders didn't want one person to have all the power. You know, there's separation of powers, there's checks and balances, and we're just seeing all this stuff change, like, over the course of 4 years, and, you know, it's not what the founders envisioned, it's not what the Constitution says it's supposed to be, and Obama's just doing it, and he's gotten away with it for so long. I'm worried about the future of our country because, you know, maybe we'll survive the Obama presidency, but we can't keep doing this over and over again. You know, every generation is losing more and more freedom, and, you know, I mean, we're looking around, seeing things happen, and, you know, we get kind of desensitized to it over time. But, you know, in the end, we're looking around and thinking, man, George Orwell really knew what he was talking about because it's starting to look exactly like 1984. We're just a few years late.
Yeah, I'm sure you've been seeing the news lately that and this didn't make it into the book because it came out, you know, a little bit too late to get included in there, you know, where they're basically keeping tabs on military members who supposedly suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder and using that as, you know, with the as a reason, well, they can't have arms because they're mentally unstable. And
right.
These are guys that, you know, we sent overseas to fight for us, and, you know, you're allowed to carry an M16 when you're under government orders, but, oh, my goodness, don't you dare have even so much of a shotgun when you get back home. And it's, as Matt was saying, you know, it's like this guy is supposedly a constitutional scholar, and as I pointed out earlier, I don't think he knows what a law actually is. I think his attitude is that a law is whatever he needs it to be at the moment. And at the moment, at Sandy Hook, he needed it to be the ability to restrict our rights to bear arms. and you get into the ridiculous liberal things. Well, you don't need a 10-round clip to hunt deer. And I keep pointing out to them, well, the Second Amendment isn't about my right to hunt a deer. I would never hunt a deer anyway. I don't like deer meat. The Second Amendment is, I hate to put it this way, it's so we could fight the government if we had to. I mean, that's what it's for. And, you know,
right,
people are afraid to say that.
Well, in the militia, too. Mm-hmm.
And the ultimate irony is that there are gun laws that are currently on the books that Obama isn't even enforcing. You know, and
that
we talk about it, we talk about this in the book quite clearly about how, you know, there's been a decrease in, prosecutions of gun crimes, even though the crime rate hasn't gone down at the same rate. So clearly, whether it's I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy or anything like that to try and make, gun crimes seem more of a problem or whatever. But, it just seems like, why is it that the answer to everything is to have new laws? I mean, it's just like, well, didn't Holder or maybe it was Obama that said today that, we got to introduce safeguards to prevent the IRS from making these kind of politically motivated, tax against different groups. It's like, well, it already is illegal. What do we need another law for? I mean, why is it that everything has to be, well, let's have a new law when we have existing laws that we're not enforcing? The answer isn't to say that, we got to have new laws. It's, why don't we throw in jail the people that have violated the ones that are on the books?
Well, I'll actually go a little bit further than that. I'll actually go into a little bit of conspiracy theory on that because, with Obama not enforcing gun laws, there has been a surge in gun-related crime between 2010 and 2011. That's noted in the book. And, it's a 45% drop in the caseload that was done under George Bush for prosecuting people for violating federal gun laws. And, what's your explanation for this? I mean, you're supposedly a liberal who wants to, get guns off the streets and get guns out of the hands of criminals. Why are you not prosecuting them? And, you start to get that. What else can you say? It's a paranoid way to think. Maybe he wants there to be an increase in gun crime so that people will demand gun control.
Mm-hmm,
and Sandy Hook
exactly.
comes along like Sandy Hook comes along like a godsend for him. It's like, oh my goodness, a whole bunch of kids got massacred. Here's a crisis. Ain't gonna let this go to waste. Immediately, he's out there pulling on our heartstrings and signing 23 executive orders to restrict gun rights. As if that would have stopped Sandy Hook, when it wouldn't. So it's clearly he's got another agenda.
And you know what would stop Sandy Hook? And I'll go off on a little tangent here. What would stop Sandy Hook, things like Sandy Hook, is allowing teachers who have been trained in the use of firearms, okay, of course this would be, in a secure place, okay, to be able to bring those firearms to school. Or say, look, if you're a principal of a school, those kids are under your guard. They're under your watch. You are required, as part of being a principal of a school, to be trained in the use of a handgun. So if you have to go out and protect those children, you need to be able to do that. Or at the very least, let teachers who have been trained in the use of a firearm be able to bring that in. Bring the weapon in the school just in case it has to be. I mean, having a sign on a door at a school saying, gun-free zone, well, you're just telling, someone such as those at Sandy Hook, oh, great, I'm going to go in here with some detonator. There's nothing going to happen here to me, or at least I'm going to be able to do a lot of damage before something does. So you're just asking for them to come in and say, look at all these unguarded people that I can just cause mass havoc and get myself on the news. As I said, I'll go off on a little tangent there, guys.
No, but look what happened when Sandy Hook happened. It's like the people on the left side were just, when that was brought up, maybe we should have an armed person at the school. They were like, it's ridiculous. But then also somebody pointed out, look how many guns there have around the president. I mean, clearly having guns around in the hands of good people deters bad people from coming in there with guns. I mean, it's my little thing. You never hear about these crazies getting their M16 or their, AR-15 they always seem to want to use and going to the police station and open fire. I mean, they always go to the school or the movie theater like we saw in Colorado the other year. It's just, to me, it's so logical that, there's really no argument about it, but you get an argument anyway because, let's face it, the agenda of the left, and it always has been, is to disarm the American people. because, let's face it, unarmed people are easier to control. It's just as simple as that. They don't, but also it comes down in a certain sense, they also just don't trust us with that kind of power. They're like, well, wait a second, these are the same racist, you know, knuckle-dragging idiots that we don't want them to raise their own children, we don't want them to educate their own children, we don't want them to control, you know, the activities of their own lives, so why should we let them have guns? And, you know, it all works together. You don't have to have a conspiracy theory on this. It's just the way the liberal mind seems to work.
Matt?
I totally agree with, you know, it's this is how it is, and you know, we just got to do what we can to deal with it. I think Mark nailed it right on the head.
Well, then let's bring this conversation over to Obamacare. Of course, I know a lot of folks listening are probably just waiting for us to bring that up, especially with, you know, all the different things going on. And then it being, you know, coming, you know, more to the fore in 2014, of course, now, you know, it's considered a tax. And then we also have that, you know, some it's been funded by Congress or some states who are saying, you know, we're not going to follow it. But, of course, you know, the federal government's going to come back and say, well, okay, well, then if you're not going to do it, then there's funds that's going to be kept away. That's what we've already taken from your states. So let's go ahead and let's hash that out.
Want to start, Matt, or you want me to dive into this one?
Why don't you dive into it? You seem
he's on a roll.
On a roll. Okay. Well, you know, just I mean, just let's go back to the beginning here. Remember how Obamacare was also first sold? He was going to do a bipartisan bill. He was going to get Republicans and Democrats together, and we were going to work it out and figure out what to do. And, you know, let's face it, back in 2009, I think we were all a little shell-shocked. Let's say we lost. We lost big. We didn't control the presidency or the White House or the House or the Senate. I think we all admitted we were going to get national health care. I mean, we were just stuck with it because, hey, they won. And the only thing I was hoping for is that at least we'd get a little seat at the table and maybe put a little bit of free market common sense into whatever monstrosity these Democrats were going to cook up. But Obama froze the Republicans out, wouldn't let them have any say in it at all. And then by doing that, it became such an absurdly bad bill that the only way they could shove it through was by first bribing other Democrats with our taxpayer money. Remember the Cornhusker kickback and the Louisiana Purchase. And then even then they had to use legislative sleight of hand to get it through, calling it a reconciliation bill, I think what it was. So they didn't need 60 votes in the Senate. And, you know, this is the bill that we got now. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi's favorite statement, or famous statement there, we have to pass it before we know what's in it. Well, now we're finding out what's in it. And even some of the Democrats who were bribed to support it are going, my goodness, this is a bad bill. I wonder how a bill of how many pages was it, 1,500 pages that we didn't read? How could that suck? Well, guess what? It did.
So what are your thoughts? You know, we actually did a show on this, gosh, a long time ago when it came out. With the Supreme Court, and this is going a little bit off topic, so we won't talk about it a lot, with the Supreme Court judging it as a tax. I mean, I thought that, you know, I know a lot of people were angry about it and said, well, why don't we just consider it unconstitutional, and it would have just put it to bed. But, you know, maybe if, with some forethought, maybe if we had, you know, I would say more conservatives in the House, then it, with it being deemed a tax by the Supreme Court, well, are not taxes supposed to be at least the beginning control of taxes or anything fiscal? It's supposed to start from the House of Representatives, and if the Republican Party is supposed to be in control of the House of Representatives, why are they not doing something about that? Using, you know, what the Supreme Court did by turning it into a tax and, you know, using the power of what's supposed to be the power of the House of Representatives to counteract it.
You know, it's funny. I think a lot of people gave John Roberts, or not a lot of people, but some people kind of thought that John Roberts was like some kind of a genius in his maneuver there. I'm still waiting for something to happen. You know, I mean, as far as we can tell, Obamacare is going to go into full effect next year. So I don't know. Like, I didn't want to believe that John Roberts had done what he had done, but I really wanted to believe that this whole, you know, like what you were just talking about was going to unravel Obamacare, but I haven't seen any evidence of that yet. Could it still happen? I'm sure. But, I'm not confident.
And as you guys pointed out earlier, that was definitely something that the Republicans could have used during the election. The Romney camp could have used during the election, and they didn't. I mean, even those running for the House, House and Senate, especially the House, could have used. I mean, this is how Priebus and Boehner, to be honest, kept their jobs after losing the way that they did in this past election is beyond. Well, it's not beyond my comprehension. I know why they still have maintained their jobs, but that's or at least their positions within the party. But that's for another show. But you'd think they would have used that also as, a political topic, to bring to the fore during the campaigns. But you didn't hear that either.
Well, think about it. I mean, how many times has Obama just totally disregarded the Constitution and gotten away with it? So, I mean, it leaves little hope that people really, that the masses really have an understanding about what's constitutional and what's not. Maybe that's why the teachers unions are in Obama's in his column, because they're not teaching kids the Constitution well enough for them to understand that hey, this what's going on right now is not supposed to be how it is, and it's scary. I mean, I know I've said that a few times, but I mean every year it just seems like. There's just more things to shake your head at and wonder how is this happening. The worst thing about Obama is that he's the one that gets away with it. I remember when I was
Matt, I just wanted to let the folks on the line who do want to chime in. After Matt, I'll go ahead and open up your mic. And then we'll have Marco, and then we'll bring it to the college. Go ahead.
I was saying I remember when I was in high school, I had a history teacher who said that the media has historically protected presidents from certain things like JFK, all his affairs and all that stuff. The media knew about it, but didn't report it. And I said, but things changed after that JFK was assassinated, and JFK was kind of like the last protected president. And I think Obama is now a new wave of ultra protected presidents by the media. This guy doesn't need Secret Service; he just needs to be in a newsroom, and he'll be protected. It's just wrong. I mean, the media is just really dropping the ball on what they're supposed to be doing. I mean, the media, they're the ones that are supposed to hold the, speak truth to power and all that stuff. And what's happened? This is not a good time right now. As I said a couple times before, things seem to be kind of changing a little bit, this past week, but, is this going to last? Is the media's welfare with Obama over, or is it just on hold for the moment? I don't know the answer to that.
A very good question. At this time, I will go ahead and open up a mic we have here. I believe this is Cindy. Cindy, thank you very much for calling in the show. What's on your mind?
Well, hey, I just it's good to hear y'all. that's a pet peeve of mine. What y'all, you asked a question a little while ago. Okay, if John Roberts declared this Constitution, the health care bill constitutional, but it's a tax. Okay, so, all right, why isn't the Senate, the House of Representatives doing something about that? Why aren't they stopping it? Because they are the purse strings. And it comes to the same thing that I have been saying all along, because the leadership, the established leadership in control of the gavel, Boehner and his like, his ilk, they are progressives, rhino progressives in our party. And it is very much their plan to keep Obamacare. And this was told to us in an interview by Bob Corker of Tennessee way before the elections. They said, don't worry, if a Republican gets nominated as president, or gets elected as president, because John Boehner and I have no intention of repealing the health care bill. So, I mean, when they come right out and say it, that they're not going to repeal the health care bill, then you know there's a problem there in their thinking and in their political views, and I'm afraid they're just plain old progressives, and they've gotten into our party. So that's your answer.
I can understand what you're saying there. I would actually put it a little bit differently, though. I think what it is that, quite honestly, they're professional politicians. Let's put it this way. When you're, you know, a career politician, which, you know, Boehner and so forth are, you know, your primary concern is to make certain you stay in office. I mean, that's what happens when you stay there. That's why I said after 4 to 6 years, we got to remember to kick these guys out, no matter how good they are, because
Virgil Good, real quick, I just want to chime in on this. Virgil Good, who ran for president in the Constitution Party, one of the things he was wanting to do was do a constitutional amendment to have term limits. And I really liked that idea. I wish that was something that could have came to the fore. Go ahead. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, and you're right. I've been in favor of term limits forever. You know, I'm actually an extremist on that. I go to the Roman way, where if after you've held office, you can't hold another office for 5 years. But that's another digression. I think what it is really is they're afraid to tangle up with Obama. If you take a look at 150 reasons why Barack Obama is the worst president in history, and you realize that he got reelected with that record, it's because, let's face it, he was being covered for. The media was covering for him. They were attacking anybody who criticized him and protecting him against all criticism. To go up against that, it takes guts. We got a few who will. Once again, Rand Paul, Daryl Issa, there's a few of them in there, that, you know, Michelle Bachmann, that got the guts to do it. Unfortunately, they're not even a majority of the Republican Congress, let alone a majority of Congress overall. So I think they're just afraid, and they just, to go after Obamacare would just take the biggest brassy guts you can imagine, and they just don't have it.
Well, if they don't have it, and if they're afraid, they need to step aside and let someone who does have it and isn't afraid in the positions of leadership that they're in.
Well, I think that's up to us, the voters, to kick out the people that aren't doing what we want them to do. And, you know, we saw something like that happen in 2010, and, you know, it comes down to activists finding the people who are interested in running in primaries to get people who aren't doing the job of the people and following the Constitution to then get them to, you know, get people who can run and win to do that instead, because otherwise, we're just the same thing happen over again.
Well, we're sort of in a war against our own party right now, because we can't get them to do what we want them to do. They've changed all the rules on us and everything just so that they could shut us up in the grassroots part of the party, the true conservatives, the Rand Paul types and the Ted Cruz types and, you know, those guys. And the Newt Gingrich types, you know, we're being stifled in our voice. They are struggling to hold their power. They're struggling, and I just think there's more of an ideology behind it than just a fear or, you know, a non inclination to meet the president head on or something like that. I just don't think it's just a matter of fear. I think the way that, because they don't have any fears fighting against the public, they sure didn't have any fears of trying to silence, you know, two-thirds of the Republican Party and getting us mad. They didn't seem to have any problem with that. So to me, I really don't think it's just a matter of fear. I think it's a true ideology that they're living for, and everything they do is based on that.
I can't argue against that. I mean, it's like, cause, you know, you can clearly take out from what's happened some evidence to back up that view. But I think also, if we do, as the people, manage to get some more people in there, and there's more than there used to be, I'd actually consider the actual number of genuine conservatives and libertarians in Congress now to be higher than any time in my life. So we just need to get it to a critical mass where now they become more afraid of us than they become afraid of the Washington Post, as it were. They need to become more afraid of making us mad than not being invited to the really cool cocktail parties in D.C. And that's just going to take some work, and that's going to take the grassroots in 2014 and in 2016, just getting to work, finding candidates, backing them, getting them into office, and letting them go to town. And then remembering, once again, never put too much of our support in any of these people. And after a few years, it's time for them to go and find somebody else. Because mm-hmm. once they get in there for 10, 12 years, they're captured by the system.
Yeah, they just want to maintain their power and their control. And then it's no longer about us. It's about how they can stay in office.
I mean, if you think about it, the nature of being in D.C. is just it's a breeding ground for people to become liberal. You know, you get into office, you go to D.C., and you're expected to basically bring home the bacon back to your district. So, I mean, I think it's the nature of Washington that's liberal. And, you know, it's hard to go there even as a conservative and not kind of succumb to that, you know, base nature of what it is to be a politician.
You know, I think they ought to create a college course in whatever few conservative colleges and Christian colleges there are left in this country. They need to consider developing a course around Dinesh D'Souza's book of Obama's pre-presidential life. And then y'all take y'all's book from, you know, the reasons why he's the worst, and then take your follow-up on that after his last 4 years. And you guys ought to have a course in college so that kids can see exactly what was going on. Because when you look at it as a big picture, I mean, if you just look at little details here and there as they're coming up, there's just, you really don't put the whole picture together. But if you took and you brought it all into a course and you stuck it all in the same place and said, look at this, let me just show you what's been going on here, I think people might begin to open their eyes more. And, you know, you said something about earlier, something about, you wished that you might sit back one day and wish that you had put such and such in the book, but you didn't. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how you could even stop soon enough. I don't know how you could stop and just start writing the book, because every day he does something new. And so I don't know when you guys decided to say, okay, well, let's stop right here and start writing it, because
we had to eventually. I think when we cut it off, Matt, it was like end of March, I think we cut it off.
Real quick, ladies and gentlemen, and folks in the audience listen live, and what I want to go back to after this is another book that we could add into that course you were talking about, Cindy, would be their first book, The Caucus of Corruption, The Truth About the New Democratic Majority, which they published in 2007, and I definitely would like to talk a little bit about that tonight, or we can a little bit more at length, because I do see that it is about 6 minutes during lifetime. You know, one of the good things here about Blog Talk Radio and this show is, as many times we do, go into what we call the extended version, which although it is not live, it is still a part of the archive, which folks can listen to later. And please, if you listen to the live portion, but do not decide to call in at 347-945-7428 to listen to the extended version, because that is the only way to listen live to the extended version is through call. The call-in number
But of course, if you opt out, because I know it's midnight here about Eastern time, please come back and revisit the archive to get the rest of the show. And also, of course, share the show with the folks with either on Twitter or Facebook or on a blog, and so we could get so we could get folks listening to this very important information. Of course, also to hear about the promotion of this great book, which I think would be very informational, and of course shed some light on the legacy or possible legacy of Barack Obama. So there's multiple ways I mentioned earlier to share, and that's of course share the link for people can listen to it, which they can also, after listening to it, they can also download it to their smartphone or iPod or even to a CD, or download it onto their computer and put on the CD, and people can listen to the show even while they're driving in their car. You know, so I know a lot of people have busy lives. You can listen to it in chunks because it is a two-hour sometimes, or many times, I should say, actually, three-hour show. So, folks, do that. And, of course, if you like the content here on Bard's Logic Political Talk, go to the follow button found here on Blog Talk Radio for the show's homepage. Just click the little follow button, and you'll get email updates on when the show is and the topic of the show. And, of course, please visit the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Now, I do see we still have some folks in the queue. If you want to just not in the queue, they keep saying that tonight, but in the switchboard, if you'd like to be in the queue and like to chime in, just push 1 on your number dial. Or also, if you're on Skype, just send me a message either through the chat or also through Facebook or through an email through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website as well. So we have about 4 minutes left of the live portion. So I want to thank everyone for coming to the live portion of the show. Take care. Have a good night, and hope to see you again. Take care. And at this time, we will bring the floor back to our guests tonight to talk about their book, 150 Reasons Why Barack Obama is the Worst President in History. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. But before we do, I would like to talk a little bit about your first book, The Caucus of Corruption, The Truth About the New Democratic Majority. So we'll start with you, Matt, and then we'll go with you, Mark, and we'll move on from there. Thank you.
Well, The Caucus of Corruption, we wrote back in 2007, and you know, we basically, that book documented all the corruption in the Democratic Party. That was at a time which, you'll remember in 2006, Democrats used corruption as their big issue to regain control of Congress, which they did successfully do. And it was, the purpose of the book was to say, you know, Democrats claimed that they were going to clean up Washington, but you know, if they really wanted to clean up Washington, they would have started with their own party. And we put all this information in there, proving that if there was any party that was corrupt in Washington, you know, the Democrats, you know, they take the back seat to nobody. I mean, as extensive as this book is, I would say The Caucus of Corruption was probably even had even more detail to it, and I think even more sources that we used to document all that corruption. So it was an interesting book to write, to say the least.
Yeah, to me it was a great thing to write, and I really enjoyed writing it because it did discuss, as we put in the book, the nexus of power and corruption in D.C., and how having power for long periods of time, which the Democrats had, and how when the media is covering for you, you can get away with a lot. Now, none of these guys got away with quite so much as Barack Obama has got away with the last 4 years, but if you remember things like, let's just think of, remember William Cold Cash Jefferson, the congressman from Louisiana, you know, excuse me, you know, he was caught with the bribe money in his freezer, you know, and he still got reelected. You know, it's like...
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, it's just, you know, how could this possibly happen? And even in more recent things, Jesse Jackson Jr. getting reelected to the House in 2012 when he's under psychiatric care and under indictment. When the media is covering for you, you can get away with just about bloody murder. I mean, it's just about short of actual murder live on camera, these guys can get away with. And as Matt and I were watching the 2006 campaign unfold, and they were going after, of course, the Republicans, and let's face it, and we admitted it in the book, there were some corrupt Republicans in 2006. You know, there were some guys who had done some things they shouldn't have done. But we're just going, wait a second, these are the guys who are running a campaign based upon give us the House because we'll be uncorrupt. I mean, we wrote about Nancy Pelosi, the first introduction she had to politics as when she was just starting out in Northern California was to break campaign finance laws. And then when she broke the laws but managed to get, like, I don't know, it was a couple $100,000 in illegal donations, the fine was like $10,000. She's like, she learned the lesson. Go ahead, break the law. The fine's going to be less than the money you get.
Right.
And nobody's ever called her on it. They still haven't called her on it. I mean, they're still trying to make her Speaker of the House in 2015. So it's just, you know, it was a good training ground, I guess it was, for 150 reasons, because it kind of sensitized Matt and I to understanding how you get away with bloody murder in politics. When you, first off, be brazen, just go ahead and do it. And secondly, if you're a liberal, count on the media to cover for you. And that's what Obama has done, and that's what the Democrats did and continue to do since 2006.
And real quick, folks, we do have someone like to chime in on the line and opening up your mic. I believe this is Kelly. Kelly, thank you very much for coming into the show. And I want to make a note here about Kelly and Cindy as well. They've definitely contributed to the show and helped bring some good folks here to Bard's Logic. So, of course, thank them both for coming on and all the things they've done for the show and for the grassroots in the past. And, of course, thank you, Kelly, again for coming to the show. How are you tonight?
Oh, hey, good, Robert. I'm certainly enjoying listening. I didn't expect you to text me and say, hey, you want to come on, but...
it's always good to hear from you. I haven't heard from you for a while.
I'm sorry about that. I certainly miss your show. I've been an expert witness in a case over a pile of dirt. It's silly. The jury might be in this for 4 weeks. I'll go into details later after jury rules. I was on the hot seat, judge on my left, jury on the right. I even schooled an attorney in appointed law that he ran. It's gotten me a real fresh taste of the judicial system and the jury and all this kind of stuff. So I'm sorry, I'm going to jam till midnight or maybe 2 in the morning because I'm on the hot seat again tomorrow. But I did, you know, so if someone were to ask me, oh, did you hear about all the scandals going on, I'd have to say, which one? We got the Benghazi, we got IRS, we've got the AP, we've got the kill list, which hasn't really been mainstream. Yeah, which one, guys? I mean, come on, when is Congress going to step up to this? And by the way, I want to end with a quick quote, and I'm going to still listen to you guys. A quick quote I found in a book by Howard Brown, the Libertarian candidate of years ago. He said something like this, politicians, it goes back to that old adage, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 35 times, shame on me.
Yeah, now, I've got a new adage, and I don't do this kind of talk much here on Bard's Logic, but I've got a new adage. It says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me a third time, I'm just a dumbass. I seen your number in the queue, so I had to message you and see if you'd want to come on. Cause, as I said, I better heard from you for a bit. So.
Well, yeah, I'm going to put me on mute. So enjoy your show again. I'll be in touch next week. We got Judge Gray, by the way.
That's right. That's right. The 22nd, and we're going to have to touch real quick before you go. We're going to want to touch base about that very soon, so we can go over some more details and things of that nature. Sound good?
Yeah, just another quick promo. Judge Gray, I haven't got him yet on. I almost forgot about him. Been so busy. But Judge Gray, he was a VP candidate with Gary Johnson for the presidential election. And I actually shook his hand
a little over a month ago, and I met him at the California Libertarian State Convention, and he's got some good points, and he was even on Fox, and I think he's going to be real. He's going to join us for an hour. So people out there, they got questions about libertarians, bring it on. I think you'll like this.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having Mr. Gray on to the show and talk about what he's got going on there. And, of course, talk about the Free and Equal .org's United We Stand Festival. And it looks like, unfortunately, we lost Matt. One of the bad things here about the extended version is once a call is dropped, that the person will no longer be able to call in, unfortunately.
You might have lost Matt because it's midnight. He's got to go to work tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it just kind of dropped off. Oh, I understand. I understand that as well. So, well, thank you very much, Matt, for coming to the show. What we could do, if you're still listening and it just dropped off from a battery dying or something of that nature, you can, I need to go back in. I don't get my number out over the air. So, but thank you very much, and I definitely look forward to speak with you again. So we've got you, Mark. Now you're in the hot seat for the rest of the show. I mean, I don't know what your schedule is like for the morning, so we can begin to start wrapping things up if you like. And I appreciate you coming on and spending as much time with us as you did tonight to talk about your book.
We appreciate you bringing us on because we do want to get the word out about it. I'm afraid I'm going to have to let you go, too, because I got to get up at 4:40 in the morning to go to work. Got a bunch of liberals I got to get provide their welfare for. So, but to wrap up what the book is for, once again, as Matt and I said, it's to try and get the truth out. We want people to know what really happened in the first 4 years of Obama's administration, because without knowing the full truth, none of us can actually make anything better. And that's what we decided to do. That's what the book is for. We do hope people will pick it up, read it. I mean, if you want to throw eggs at us after you read it, please do so. We'll be more than happy to answer any challenges or complaints about it, but it's the facts. This is what happened, without a doubt.
Well, definitely. I appreciate you coming on to your show. And if you would just do the show one favor, and, of course, this would be reciprocal, is that just take the link to the show this evening. And you have a blog, perhaps just post it on the blog to give the folks a link to go to listen to the show, and also where they could share the link themselves, and also the podcast as well, where they can download the file. I think it's only like 27 megabytes or so to download the whole show. So if you could just do that, that'd be well appreciated.
No, it definitely. I mean, it's like it's good for you, good for us, and it's also good for citizen journalism in general. We got to support each other. All of us are in the battle for the truth and for America. If we don't support each other, what do they say? United we stand, divided we fall.
Exactly. That was very well put. Very well put. And thank you very much. Take care. And I do would like to extend an invitation at some other time to have you folks on, either to talk more about the book or the upcoming book for the second edition, or just, you know, something else that, you know, is of concern and things we want to talk about regarding liberty and the grassroots.
You know, anytime you want, you just give us a call, email, fax, throw a rock through our window. We'll be more than happy to answer you.
Well, great. I appreciate it, Mark. And tell Matt I said have a good day tomorrow.
You too. You have a great night, and God bless to you and all your audience.
Thank you. Take care. Good night.
Bye.
Okay, folks, yes, that was Matt signing off. Or, I'm sorry, that was Mark signing off, and that was Mark Margolis, and I'm sorry, Mark Noonan and Matt Margolis. I guess I'm starting to lose it a little bit as well. I do still have Cindy here on the line. I know she had to get a little bit, so what we'll do is I'll do a little ending things, and I'll open up the mics and see if there's any parting words from either Kelly or Cindy before I close things up for this evening. Okay. Well, I see that both of them had to call it a night as well, because yes, it is after midnight here in Eastern time, and I do appreciate the folks coming in and listening to the last part of the show tonight in the extended version.
And also want to make a correction. Earlier tonight when I was talking about another book that you can find on Amazon.com, and that would be the World of Shandahar series, Dragons of Ancillar, or Blood of Dragons. So Dark Mists of Ancillar is what I meant to say. It's the World of Shandahar, Dark Mists of Ancillar. So I wanted to make that correction because I like to have things accurate here on the show. Anyway, I like to do that. So anyway, I will end tonight the way I end every night, and that's by saying, of course, thank you for coming to the show. Have a good night and take care, and I look forward to seeing you again. And, of course, please share the link. Thank you very much. Take care. And I will end. Oh, there you are, Cindy. I was getting ready to close things out. Is there any last things that you want to...
I tried to talk a couple of times, but maybe I don't know if you had me muted or what, because I had unmuted myself. But anyway, that's okay.
Well, there you go. Well, you know what? We still have plenty of time. I know some folks were thinking, just shut things down. But if I know Kelly connected back, you just can listen. If there's any last parting things that you'd like to say or discuss, we still have plenty of time here.
I just wanted to make sure of where we could get the book, because I've been going in and out of the room, and I might have missed. Is this available anywhere you can get it, or do you have to go to Amazon or their website or what?
They have it on Amazon. You could also get it on Kindle. And it's 150 Reasons Why Barack Obama is the Worst President in History. And they also have a blog. Let me read down my list here that you can check out, and I'll tell it to the folks. It's blogsforvictory.com. It's blogsforvictory.com. And I spelled it out because I know sometimes folks put a number for when they say four. So I just wanted to make sure that people got the right website address.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure, because I was going to try to find that book. I think that's well worth. I think it's one of those books you need to have when arguing with idiots. You know.
There you go. I think so.
I mean, when you put it all together, like we're talking about, when you add up all the stuff together, and you say, "Look, this book is full of stuff," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start itemizing one by one the things he's done. Eventually, even a Democrat. Even you know, people who are dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, eventually they have to say, well, I have to make a decision. Do I want this country to wind up being a communist state, or, you know, at least a socialist state? Are we going to be the United Socialist State of America? Or do I want to go back to plain old good old liberalism, you know? And they have to make the decision, because if they keep electing these Democrat presidents that are bent on socialism, they're going to hand
Europe,
up.
That's all I'm going to say. Do we want to be up? Or do we want to turn out to be like Europe?
Well, we're actually going to turn out worse, because Europe is also going to end up worse. They're in an in-between state. Every communist country starts out by being socialist. They indoctrinate the people in socialism, and you got to let the government take care of you. And then once that happens, there's a point where you can't go back. And so you cross that line, and now the government has control over you. They've got your guns. They've got your property. They've got everything that you own. And now they've got your children in their schools, and they're indoctrinating them. And pretty soon, you have no way of going back. You have no way of fighting it. And you're gone. And Russia and China are just waiting for the rest of us to get into the position where we're socialists too. And then our governments can take control. And then it's a matter of all the communist dictators deciding who's going to be the boss, which could force a war, and we could have us another world war just between communist dictators, you know. I just see such a grim future for this whole planet if the United States doesn't survive this. You know, I just look at us as the last chance that every other country has.
Yeah, the shining beacon on the hill.
Yeah, we're it, and we're about to go under, and people are more interested in electing a black president and being so politically correct than they are in saving the republic. They just don't care about that. They're just so short-sighted and so, I don't know. It's so depressing sometimes. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure where I could get the book. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And that's on Amazon.com, and I believe on you can get that on Kindle as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it.
Okay. Well, great. Yeah, I mean, and just a, you know, last comment, as I know, you know, a lot of folks, you know, you know, Barack Obama has an historical moment. You know, I know a lot of folks had a lot of, you know, hope in that. And, of course, you know, it was a perfect storm against Republicans at that time as well. That's why you got, you know, the wave of Democrats going through. But it's really not helping when the so-called opposition party isn't really, in essence, doing its part as opposition.
We're not an opposition. We're helping them.
Right. And so, folks, it's very important to get this book. Check it out. You know, it's not about anything personal about Obama. It's just what he has been doing to this nation. And that's what it is. And, of course, we're not talking about, you know, the nation for ourselves, but, you know, for folks to really take this into consideration. We are thinking about the nation, not for ourselves, but for our children and grandchildren. What kind of nation, what kind of world are we going to be leaving to our children and grandchildren? And isn't that what we're really here for, is to help take care of them? Isn't that our first and foremost responsibility, is to take care of them? And if we're not working towards taking care of our nation, then what kind of nation are we going to leave for our children? So I think that's something for folks to think about, you know, when they think about how the rest of the world lives and how their children live. Think of how the rest of the world children, think how the socialist children live, and think about how you lived when you were a child, and think what your child's going to have to deal with if our country does go down that path. Is it a path we want our children to go down? Well, with that thought, folks, I will close out the show. Thank you very much, Cindy, for coming to it and giving our parting words. My hope is that, of course, folks, when they thought we were going to be clearing out, didn't clear out themselves and were able to stay on and get the last points. So I think there was some really important things said even at the very end. So I will end this show, as I do every show, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn, which, of course, folks can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. Thank you very much, folks. Take care. Have a good night. And look forward to seeing you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.